Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1. With Opel and the all-new Opel Astra. German engineering at its core. It's our most efficient Astra yet.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Whether we like it or not, the internet has become a popular resource to learn about health and also to investigate your own health condition. But given the large amount of inaccurate information online, people can easily become misinformed. And in the time of a global pandemic, it can become increasingly difficult to try and decide what's fact and what's fake news. Well, the Health Research Board is hosting an online conference tomorrow and also Wednesday to explore the issue of trust and truth in health research. Director of Evidence Synthesis Ireland, Professor Declan Devan, is part of that conference and he joins us now in our Galway studio. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Claire.
Thank you for joining us. It's a good day to be talking about this because we were just talking about the Oxford vaccine, and vaccines often come up, don't they, when we're discussing the area of misinformation. How do you think people should handle the information that's out there on vaccines?
That's a good question, and certainly relates to Professor Lamb's conversation earlier. I think the mass vaccinations have given us some of the greatest advances in human health internationally. But clearly, it's also one of the biggest tests of public trust. And that's part of what this conference is about, is getting that balance between educating the public about the necessity for universal vaccine coverage, and doing so in a way that builds trust and addresses some of the other things that we need to look at to ensure that we have a successful vaccine rollout across the country.
And given that vaccines are so topical at the moment, are you seeing a surge in misinformation surrounding vaccines?
Yes, as soon as, and it's not just this vaccine, it's as soon as there is news that a vaccine is under development, you start to see some of the claims and the rumours and misinformation and disinformation being spread on social media, messaging services, the internet, newspapers indeed. So we do see misinformation start to surface the second there's any steps being taken towards developing a successful vaccine.
Mm-hmm. But vaccines that take years to develop, people might have more comfort because they feel, well, any side effects have played out over time. Whereas with this one, there hasn't been the time scale there.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I can certainly appreciate some of the concerns that some people may have in that regard. And I think sometimes we perhaps group everybody who's hesitant about taking a vaccine into one group, the group who just dismiss science. That's not the case. I think there certainly is a group who dismiss science on blanketly, but there's also a group of people who are unsure what to do, and there's a group of people who are concerned about the safety and effectiveness of the vaccine. So as your previous guest commented, I think what we need to do really well is have clear and consistent communication so we can build public confidence and trust in a vaccine program. And that explains some of the things you addressed earlier, explaining how vaccines work, how they're developed, their safety and their effectiveness, how they're approved, for example, the importance of population-wide coverage to ensure that a vaccine, to achieve community immunity. Mm-hmm. In terms of the long-term effects, there aren't any shortcuts being taken at the moment, being taken in the development of the vaccine in terms of safety or effectiveness. But of course, we don't have any long-term data. But what we do have is long-term data right now about the long-term effects of COVID-19, where we have, nearly 90% of people in some studies reporting at least one symptom months after the initial infection. So I think it's balancing those long-term effects that are being followed with some of the absolute known harms associated with long-term COVID.
For someone like you, though, when the data emerges on the vaccine, you'll be able to look at that and you'll be able to decide, yes, I'm happy to take this vaccine. I'm happy for my family to have this vaccine. But there will be a cohort of people who, no matter how much data you present, they simply will not take that vaccine.
Yes, and that is the case. And I think that might be a group of individuals who would reject any scientific claims on the basis of them coming from a science community, perhaps. And you do see evidence of that. And again, it comes back to us. I would hope that they're a small group of people. I would hope they become a smaller group of people when We don't try to achieve vaccination through coercion or censorship in some way, and we start to explain and communicate clearly about the value of science. We do it with education. We give good access to the vaccination programmes. We have conversations like this conversation and are open to having debate. I think when those things happen and looking at the vaccination programme as a complex series of things that need to be done in parallel, we start then to maybe bring more of the community with us and letting them, as individuals, take an informed decision on that vaccine.
I'm interested to know where you stand on people who have been recently diagnosed with an illness, whether it's serious or not, because we were talking about cancer here in the programme last week. We had a number of people who have been through cancer talking to us, and some of them said they didn't go near the internet to research their symptoms. But one man said, Robbie was here, and he said he found great comfort in finding people online who had been through what he had been through in various forums and so on. I mean, do you think it's a good idea to Google your symptoms?
Unquestionably, I think the internet, you know, has the potential to offer real good. I think, for example, the gentleman you spoke about, offering him access to a community of individuals who perhaps share similar diagnoses and perhaps going through similar experiences, I think is a really good thing. I think we've seen during the pandemic that the ability of the internet to allow people have communication in a manner that they wouldn't have had before, it's actually had some benefits. It's opened up other communication avenues. I guess it's what the internet is being used for. There's a lot of misinformation on the internet. There's a lot of good information on the internet. And it's having the skills to be able to discern what's reliable and what's unreliable. That's where the real challenge lies.
Yes, and how do you do that?
That is a good question, and that isn't easy. I think it's about educating the public, and I include myself in that. Mm-hmm. And some of the work we're doing with the Informed Health Choice Initiative is things like introducing some key concepts that people can consider when they're faced with a health claim. So, and the first thing of that is recognising when a claim about the effects of a treatment are being made, and try to stop and ask, are those reliable claims being made? So, for example, considering that. Not everything that has worked for another person will work for me, that more of something is better, or that newer is better, or that older is better. And indeed, one of my own particular foibles is, you know, recommended by experts. Well, not every expert agrees, and not every expert is an expert.
When you get into the grey area, that's when it gets difficult, when there are signs to back up two seemingly conflicting answers on a health issue.
Yeah, and that can be difficult for any of us. I think one of the strategies for dealing with that is to look at a body of evidence, not rely on just one single individual study that shows that people who got something or didn't get something. It doesn't mean that's the final answer. So what we should be looking at is, what does the global body of evidence say when it's put together? What we call synthesized in something like a systematic review. And there are bodies of evidence available that the public can access on some of these questions around vaccinations, for example, to see that have done the work in pooling this global body of evidence together in a manner that is understandable. We need to do more work on that in ensuring that we're translating that information to a manner that treating the public as informed citizens who can take a decision themselves, but we're doing some of the effort in translating that in a manner that can be understood by all.
Okay. The other hat that you wear is that you're chair of midwifery at NUIG. Now, there's been a lot of scrutiny over the treatment of women and their partners during lockdown, and some, we know, only being allowed in, the partners, for the last hour of labour and having to leave straight afterwards. Where do you stand on that?
It's a really difficult situation, and I do understand completely the need to reduce the transmission of COVID-19. And indeed, I think we've done much right in Ireland at both policy and public levels. These restrictions are introduced in the healthcare settings for the right reason. They're trying to promote social distancing while continuing to provide service. And that makes sense as an overarching arm, particularly perhaps within the Irish maternity hospitals that try to provide the best care, as we know, in buildings, in most cases, that are a long way from adequate by modern maternity standards, being honest. Mm-hmm. But I do think in the rush to respond to the crisis, that blanket hospital visit restrictions have been applied blanketly and ignores the important role of some visitors. And I think that's certainly the case in maternity care. There's an obvious concern that partners will miss the birth of their own children or at least be asked to leave shortly afterwards. But beyond that, women have also received devastating news at antenatal scans, are trying to make very difficult decisions at really quite vulnerable time in their lives if they're left alone without the support of their partners. So I do think we need to relook at this. I think there are solutions that we could seriously consider. I am concerned that the decisions around restrictions are being taken in absence of consultation with the users of the services. That seems to be the case. And I'm concerned that it might undermine that public solidarity at a point when we need the public working together with the health services as we face the challenge of dealing with, for example, vaccination rollout.
Okay, Professor Declan Devan, thank you very much for joining us today. And that Health Research Board conference is on tomorrow and Wednesday. It's free. It welcomes researchers, policymakers, healthcare practitioners, students, patients, members of the public. You can register for one or all of the sessions. Just log on to hrb.ie.
Today with Clare Byrne. Listen back on the RTE Radio Player app.